Kingston Health Sciences Center is setting new benchmarks in brain tumor care with its Integrative Brain Tumor Program. Kingston Health Sciences Center detailed the program's successful start in a release last week, including dramatic improvements in care, global interest, and the announcement of new funding from the Canadian Cancer Society amounting to $150,000 per year for the next 3 years. Developed under the leadership of Dr. Teresa Persner, a neurosurgeon, researcher, and entrepreneur, this innovative program is achieving best-in-class patient outcomes through a unique blend of academic and entrepreneurial thinking. Dr. Persner shared the program's beginnings and the philosophy behind it in an interview with CFRC. I was wondering if you'd like to just discuss some of the specific differences in the approach of this program compared to how things used to be done that have led to significant improvements in patient outcomes at KHSC.
Yeah, for sure. So I think a big difference with what we did versus traditional academic approaches to problem solving is that we really took more of an entrepreneurial approach. And so the problem that I face, I'm fairly new to Queens still, so I got here about 3 years ago. And when I came here, I discovered pretty early on that our patients with brain tumors, they were receiving good operations and they were recovering well from the operations, but they were having a tremendously difficult time efficiently navigating the healthcare system afterwards. So I think it's something that most people can relate to in the Canadian healthcare system. It's not always so easy to go from point one to point two. And often things get dropped and lost between you know, important visits and things like that. So I sort of dug into, you know, why is this happening? Is there one specific pain point that's driving all these delays to care? And when I looked into it, there wasn't really one problem. It's just that the entire system was inefficient. And so people with brain tumors, they have to go through quite a few steps, about 16 different steps within the first 2 weeks of their diagnosis. Things like getting CAT scans and MRIs and consultations and surgery and referrals. So they have to get through all of these things, and they were getting small delays at every step. So there wasn't one step that was a huge delay. Every step had small delays. And so cumulatively, it became just a very sluggish system. So when I thought about, you know, how do we solve this? I kind of thought back at, you know, who solves problems, these systemic problems well? And what I'll say is I've spent a lot of time in academia, but also in the entrepreneurial world. And academia is very, very good at identifying and describing problems. So academic approaches are really good at saying, here is the problem, here is a source of inequity, and here are the people suffering from it. Academia is not especially good at then solving that problem. It kind of, the buck ends kind of at finding, discovering, and describing. Whereas in my experience, entrepreneurship or small startups are unbelievably good at identifying specifically what the customer needs, rapidly developing prototypes to meet those needs, and then iterating based on how well their prototypes reflect the needs of the customer. And if a startup can't do that well and meaningfully, it won't survive its first year, right? So it has to survive. It has to be lean, fast, and actually focused on what do people want from me. And so of the two systems, I thought, well, what if we combine them? We'll use the academic approaches to identify the specific problems. But then we can use an entrepreneurial approach to then rapidly solve those problems. And so long story short, the approach we took is an approach called design thinking. It's kind of almost the opposite of the scientific method. So in the scientific method, the scientists come up with a hypothesis, they test it, and then they either reject the hypothesis or they keep it and they publish it. So design thinking is the opposite. We started with no preconceived notions. We went out, we talked to about 43 different people, everything from patients and families to physicians to allied health. And then we also did a deep dive and looked at every pain point of the last 1,500 patients who've had brain tumor surgery. And between those two things, we were able to then design prototypes that reflected those needs, and then launched it like a company, where we launched with all of our new, we have a navigator. She has an email address. We have a website. We have standardized referrals. We have patient education. Again, all reflecting the need of that empathize stage. And then went out and tried it. And it you know, surprisingly, I guess, you know, surprisingly or not, depending on how you look at it, but it's worked really, really well. So for things like time to getting MRI or time to getting radiation, we went from, you know, really pretty low to now almost best in class in a lot of those values. So it's just been very effective.
What are some of the specific changes? I was wondering if you could give us a specific example of a problem that you identified through that consultation process and then how you solved it.
Sure. So I'll give you two very concrete examples. So one thing we noticed is there was a disparity in the outcomes for patients from rural towns, so less than 50,000, versus urban. So if you come from a town of less than 50,000 people, you end up having much lower quality indicator metrics than if you were from a larger town. And interestingly, it's not a matter of being from far away. So someone from a town of 50,000 that's close to Kingston will do worse than someone from, let's say, Peterborough, which is quite a bit further away, but a larger town. And when we looked into, you know, we identified that through the quantitative methods. Then we went and we actually spoke to people from the two different patient demographics and tried to see, you know, what are the differences here? And that, again, gives that very person, that human-centric perspective to quantitative data. And we found a big thing is that people didn't really know once they were discharged from surgery when they should hear from radiation, when they should get the MRI. They didn't really know what was supposed to happen next. And so they weren't able to flag when they were falling between the cracks. And it seemed like people from smaller towns were less likely to advocate for themselves and to come forward and say, hey, why haven't I heard anything, than people from larger towns. And so one way we got around that is we made these patient educational materials, these brochures, walking patients through, okay, here are all the people you're going to meet. This is what you should expect. This is the likely treatment you're going to get, so they can know what's coming. And importantly, in that brochure, we created a timeline where they knew after surgery, this is when you should be hearing from each person. And here are the contact informations if you don't hear from them. So it was a way of empowering the patient to understand what they should, to take away the mystery and honestly, the fear of not knowing what's coming next, and putting the power back in their hands so that they know if they haven't heard, they shouldn't have heard, versus they haven't heard because something has gone wrong, which happens all the time in our system. Another example was that patients would get exceptional care while in hospital. That was a theme that came out in the thematic analysis of all the interviews. They were very happy with the care they received while in hospital. But then once they left hospital, it was as if they were completely on their own and they had no idea what to do. And it's extremely hard to get in contact with your neurosurgeon once you've left the hospital, right? So what we did with the navigator, we created a navigator not only as a unified touch point throughout all the different points of their journey, but we have an email address associated with her as well. And so when someone leaves, if they have a question, something they forgot to ask before leaving, now they can just email the navigator. Well, as before, they really had no effective way of getting answers to those questions other than waiting for the next visit. And what I found surprisingly is that the navigator email is absolutely used, but probably the most impactful part of it is the fact that people have the security of knowing that there is that email address if they need it. And most people don't use it. So those are two examples of just, you know, a combination of quantitative and qualitative insight that resulted in meaningful change for the patient, both in terms of their flow of care, but also the quality of care that they're getting.
Rewinding a bit, what was the timeline there? Did this work start right when you got to Queens 3 years ago, or has this been a shorter process? When did this all start?
It's a great question. It's really new. So it's only been 1 year. So the change happened over 1 year, which is just crazy for healthcare or academia. Nothing happens in 1 year. So 1 year is a long time in a startup's life, right? Mm-hmm. It's make or break. But in academia and healthcare, 1 year is no one expects anything to change in 1 year, really. So we launched it back in January of 2024. And then it's a bit of a soft launch. And then our navigator came on board in August of 24. And that's when we sort of really started formalizing things. So really, it's only been a little over a year. And already we're seeing these sort of outcomes. So, I'm glad the experiment worked.
Since its launch, the Integrative Brain Tumor Program has dramatically improved key metrics in brain tumor care. Notably, the number of patients receiving surgery within provincial targets has increased by over 40%. Delays in radiation therapy have been reduced by 40%, and postoperative MRIs are now performed in a more timely manner for 89% of patients. Brain tumor surgery volumes have surged as more patients are receiving care at KHSC, increasing from 46 patients with primary brain tumors in 2023-24 to a projected 105 patients in 2024-25. Despite its success, getting the program off the ground wasn't without its challenges. What have been some of the biggest challenges you faced while implementing the program?
It's so hard to do truly interdisciplinary work. It's really hard. And a lot of my work has been truly combining different fields because I think it's the best way to get to the most efficient and effective solution. So it works because it makes sense, but it only really makes sense to you in the beginning, right? So if you look at the academic structure, it's really meant to recognize and support things that it's familiar with, right? And so if you think of convincing people to come on board, getting grant funding, executing, getting even institutional support, if you're someone who has always done a good amount of science, it's resulted in predictable outcomes, and you're suggesting you want to do something very similar again, people feel comfortable by that. They recognize that because it's just the same thing, right? And so because you've been successful before, then you'll likely be successful again. They also understand your methods because they're well-established methods. They understand what you're trying to do because it's what other people tried to do before. And so getting institutional support, getting funding, getting even REB approval, things like this, there's a pipeline for it. When you do something that is truly unexpected and developing an academic neuro-oncology program as if it was a startup is truly unexpected. There's no pipeline for you. And it's very, very uncomfortable for people because they don't have a way of assessing whether or not you're going to be successful other than trusting your vision. And it's, there's very limited funding for academia. There's very limited funding in the healthcare system to convince people that it's worth taking that funding and instead of giving it to someone who is more of a sure bet, risking it on you is unbelievably hard. So getting buy-in on every level was very hard. And, it took a lot. The reason it only launched in January versus, year one was because it basically took 2 years of unrelenting advocacy to even give it a shot. And now that it's worked, there's a lot more enthusiasm around it. So it's a lot easier going forward. And we're probably going to go to several other institutions, both, in different countries and within the province in 2025, 26. So now that it's worked, you've overcome that barrier, but oh my gosh, the execution inertia and energy required to do something truly different is unbelievable. And it takes a lot of, you have to have a lot of perseverance, but we got there. And I think the moment that the hospital agreed to give us to fund the Navigator, that was really the turning point where after that, I knew we were going to be successful because it all hinged on that. And we have the absolutely most amazing, wonderful, smart human, a navigator named Dana. And she's just been so transformative to the program. But when I met her and I knew we were going to partner, I knew it was going to be huge. And one more other shout out I want to give to is Dr. Katie Goldie. She's with the School of Nursing. She's a professor in the School of Nursing. The nursing perspective here was absolutely critical. And so in the early days of the design process, she really provided this valuable nursing perspective, but also she's just an unbelievably intelligent person. So gave her overall insight to the program as well. So it was a battle I fought alongside other people. And I'm just very appreciative that they put their faith in me when really I had no data to support the vision.
With the foundation laid, the program is now poised for thoughtful expansion, according to Dr. Persner. What's next? Where do you see this program going in the near future and beyond?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a question that we can better address now that we have the Canadian Cancer Society funding. That was the second point where I realized that the viability of the project was real. So we're going to expand. I think it's really important to expand thoughtfully and not to blow up too big too quickly. It's another way that startups actually end up kind of shooting themselves in the foot is they get too big too quickly and they can't sustain themselves. So it's important to be very thoughtful. That was the reason why we initially did the program looking at just primary brain tumors because it's a very manageable population. The next step will first be to expand the diseases. So we're now looking at brain metastasis. Patients in our catchment with brain metastasis have many of the same problems as primary brain tumors, and we haven't addressed address that at all at this point. It's only been primary brain tumors. So expanding to other diseases, starting with brain metastasis, and then expanding to different sites. So we're talking very actively with Health Sciences North, so the group in Sudbury, and then we're discussing with a group in Australia, and we're just working out the logistics now of, you know, what does that look like? And it can be anything from just adopting our materials and our pipeline and our live tracker, or it could be as complicated as going through the whole design thinking process themselves and then comparing, you know, the differences and similarities. And of course, I would help really mentor them through that process. But that's our next battle.
This has been Christina Lori with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.